You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, November 10th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Tim Carr from Free Press on the latest attack on the internet could possibly shut down citizen media like those like that coming out of Occupy Wall Street. Then Brendan DeMille of the Smog Blog on the use of psyops by fracking companies to turn communities against each other so that they can continue to poison their water and pollute their land. Also today on the show, the Republican clown car in full effect last night. A debate on CNBC. We will cover that extensively in the better half of the program. UCal Berkeley cops arrest over 30 people last night. But first, they decide to shove nightsticks in these students' guts. Harvard yard occupied. And Congressman Joe Walsh loses it in a bar, screaming at constituents. And just coincidentally, everything he yelled at them was a complete lie. Very, we got a packed show for you today, folks. Also, there were riots last night in because of Joe Paterno stepping down as coach from Penn State, because apparently, according to grand jury testimony, he failed to report that one of his assistant coaches was raping children in on the premises. It's just an unbelievable story. I don't know if we'll get to it today, frankly. And you know, there's a lot better places to go. But apparently, this rumor about Sandursky or the assistant coach has been out there for quite a while, and it has come to fruition. And so these Penn State students basically riot because they're upset about their coach. Were it not for the fact that as they were doing this, expressing the anger that their 83-year-old coach is going to have to step down because he was more or less protecting, and it's possible there's going to more come out, actively covering up the pedophilia that was being perpetrated by one of his assistant coaches. And God knows, I mean, how many kids this monster raped over the years because he wasn't held to account by those who actually witnessed what happened. But so while these college kids in Penn State were rioting over that, you've got kids, college students, I should say, because, you know, kids aren't expected to have this level of bravery. and basically being the victims of just an intense police brutality. And let's play that clip now. You really need to see it. We will post this on the blog. You'll hear it. I will follow along and let you know what's happening. But you have hundreds of students facing off with cops out in front of Sprout Hall. And if that name sounds familiar to you, it is where Mario Savio delivered his pretty famous, very brief speech back in 1964. In fact, yeah, let's play that Mario Savio speech from 1964 out in front of Sprout Hall as students were protesting then. And then we'll play the other clip. Let's play this Mario Savio.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
And that was 37 years ago. Savio went on to say, that doesn't mean break things. That means just lay down, sit on the ground, and make them try and move you. And that's exactly what these peaceful Occupy Cal student protesters were doing. And this video is just, it's there's something so grotesque about this. The only thing I could think of is when I saw these cops just suddenly talk to each other and then just decide they're going to take these massive nightsticks and shove them into the guts of these kids. They literally looked like the apes in a Planet of Apes. I mean, the sheer brutality.
The first person they attack too is a girl, and it's obvious that they go for her too. Like they aim for her first.
Let's play this audio. And then they just start smacking them with clubs. And shoving these clubs into these 18-year-old, 19-year-old guts. Some of them there with their backpacks full of school books. They just keep shoving these batons into them. And these kids do not move. They don't strike back. They just take it. You can hear them screaming out pain as these cops just keep shoving these clubs into their belly. And when the cops see that the kids are not moving, they're just saying, "Look what you did to us." And there was one kid there with a sweatshirt. You can see him. And he's obviously, his fingers were broken by the cops. And you can see he's holding it up to them, showing that his thumb is like dangling. Unbelievable. The bravery these kids show is just incredibly impressive. And what a juxtaposition between those morons who protested because their coach, who clearly had been protecting a pedophile, decided to riot. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable.
How many people at Penn State got beat up by riot police? Like, I'm pretty sure none, zero.
I have no idea. But I just got to say, those kids, incredibly impressive. The self-restraint and just the bravery
that those college students exhibited, just impressive. And we'll place it on the blog at Majority FM. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Tim Carr from the Free Press about a vote that's taking place in the Senate today that could destroy net neutrality, and another plan supported by a majority of Democrats, or I should say the majority of people who are supporting it are Democratic senators, that could also severely curtail the internet as we know it. And remember, were it not for the capacity for people at Occupy Wall Street to put out videos like the one we just played for you, there would be no record, no coverage of this. It would just simply have happened and vanished into the ether. So understand that the attack on the internet, while maybe it's simply for commercial interests by corporations, also has the dual benefit for these corporations of controlling dissent. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me know. This indecision's bugging me. If you don't want me, set me free. Exactly whom I'm supposed to be. Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow?
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. On the phone, Tim Carr, campaign director of the Free Press. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I mean, I just saw a video of these Occupy California students in SoCal Berkeley, or excuse me, Cal Berkeley, just getting beat up by the cops. And, you know, it occurs to me as I'm looking at this on YouTube, there's no coverage from mainstream media. This is the type of thing that may be impossible to disseminate if this attack on net neutrality happens, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. And, you know, we've seen, especially this year with the Arab Spring across the Middle East and North Africa, and, you know, events that are happening in cities like New York and Portland and in Denver and Oakland, and that the internet has become this crucial source of information. It's not only a source of information, it's also a way for people who are on site during these protests to use their cell phones and use other wireless devices to document abuses, put them out on websites like YouTube or share them via Twitter, and potentially have millions of people see these things. And we need to protect that core freedom, our freedom to connect with everybody else who's on the internet and share information back and forth. So that's really essentially what net neutrality is all about.
Yeah, let's talk about this now. Okay, so as we speak, there is a vote taking place in the Senate. Tell me about this vote.
Well, the Senate right now is debating what's called a resolution of disapproval. And this was an effort by very conservative members of the Senate, of which there are many, to kneecap the Federal Communications Commission. The FCC in 2002 put in place an open internet rule that gave some basic protections to internet users. And conservative members of the Senate, led by Kay Bailey Hutchinson of Texas, are following up a vote on the House that would resolve to void these rules. And it would not only void these rules, it would actually take away the FCC's well-established authority to protect consumers against efforts to block or censor our internet content. So that vote is happening very shortly. We think it may happen actually within the hour, and we'll know the results very soon.
And so if this vote comes out in the affirmative, then what does it do? It moves into the House?
It has already gone through the House. The House has passed this resolution of disapproval. If the Senate passes it, it then goes to the desk of President Obama. Now, President Obama, as many may remember, actually campaigned on the issue of net neutrality on several occasions. He said, quote unquote, that he would take a backseat to no one in his support for net neutrality. So he has vowed to veto this effort. And there are simply aren't enough votes in Congress to override his veto. So it's very likely that this resolution will go down to defeat, which is a good thing. But we still don't know where the president may go on this. And we're hoping.
Yeah, I was going to say, forgive my cynicism. When did he make this vow?
He made the vow, it started in 2007. He went to the Google complex down in Silicon Valley and said he was a big supporter of net neutrality. He said several times on the campaign trail, and even after he was inaugurated and was sitting president, said that he supported net neutrality. But as we've seen with a lot of his campaign pledges, that they've tended to be watered down or in some cases completely abandoned over the last couple of years. So we're going to hold him to it. And he and more recently said that he was planning to veto this bad resolution. So we just need to hold him to it and make sure that this initiative dies.
Now, just explain to people just what this concept is, because I think to a certain extent it's, the idea of imposing net neutrality is sort of a misnomer. I mean, in some ways, it's simply preserving net neutrality.
Yeah, this is the way the internet always was. Some 40 years ago, when the engineers who conceived what is the internet today, when they were trying to create a design principle, really engineering design principle about how the internet would work, they made this brilliant decision, a decision that it doesn't matter who you are. If you get onto the network, you can connect to everyone else in the network, and there won't be a gatekeeper. There will be no entity that sits in the middle of the network that says, I'm going to prioritize this person's connection, or I'm going to block this person, I'm going to block this service. And that design principle is the reason that the internet has become such a powerful force for political organizing, for free speech, and economic innovation over the last several decades. And what happened during the Bush era at the Federal Communications Commission is that they took those protections, they started to deregulate and take those protections away from Congress and away from the FCC, to the extent where we've reached a situation today where that openness, that original design, that open architecture of the internet is under threat. And this has long been a hope of the very powerful phone and cable companies who see the internet as this new profit medium for them. They want to be able to profit from people who are increasingly listening to music and watching video and doing things via their high-speed internet connections. But in order for them to do that, they have to take a wrecking ball to this open architecture so they can rebuild it as a medium that serves their interests first, but unfortunately leaves the rest of us internet users at a loss.
Tim, remind me, what institution developed this architecture, and what institution essentially supported it so that we now all have access to it?
Well, it was an institution that you may be familiar with called our government. The original design for the internet came out, a government and defense department supported research project where they wanted to create a network that had no central node, a network that was distributed. And that decentralization of the network is, in the kernel of that idea is a very powerful political idea. I think you're seeing what's happening with the Occupy movement, that right. There's this very decentralized movement where there's no real leadership and there's no real central control, and it's been very successful. But the internet is built on a similar idea, and it was government researchers, it was a number of universities that came together and said, this is a good idea, it's a good design principle for networks. You're right. I mean, we need to be clear that this was not
It's tax dollars that developed the internet, which tells us two things. One, it tells us that the free market is not going to necessarily embark on that type of thing because, of course, it doesn't have a built-in, in terms of the distribution. I'm not talking about the content, and I'm not even talking about how it gets to your door in terms of the wires. I'm talking about the architecture itself. Is almost shielded from, being cornered in terms of profit making. It also tells us that this is, a product of the commons, of our shared ownership in this. And, it is, almost the sort of, at least the, metaphorical equivalent of the airwaves, and which is owned by all of us. And essentially what, this neutrality of the airwaves. The airwaves can't be. You can license certain aspects of the airwaves, but the government will still retain a certain amount of control because it's just providing a license for usage to make sure that it's being used in a way that serves the public who paid for it or who owned it. And so this is basically a diminishment of all of our property in some way.
That's right. I mean, the success of the internet is that it doesn't have one central control. It is a public-private partnership. This is true of all media policy. I mean, if you look at the history of broadcast policy, which, you know, governs the use of our public airwaves, it's always a social contract whereby industry has a role, but it must obey certain public interest obligations in order to serve the greater public good. The internet has a long history, well, a relatively long given the history of the internet itself, of government, public, and private partnership in which this social contract exists. The problem is that over the last 20 years, the companies that actually control a part of the internet, the access points, powerful phone and cable companies like AT&T and Verizon, have been so effective in lobbying Washington that they've destroyed this contract. They've tried to paint the internet as a private entity, something that is controlled by a few corporations, and that these corporations have the right to determine what happens on the internet, what sort of content goes across this network, which is a huge problem for us, and we need to rebuild that social contract today before we lose this relatively new medium.
And this is a problem whether or not go on YouTube to watch, kittens, cuddling with each other, or if you listen to this program. I mean, theoretically, if these corporations have their way, this program could be charged. I could be charged a premium to deliver it to people, or they could charge me a premium that makes it absolutely impossible if they want to put their own version of a progressive left-wing talk show on the air, and they want it to have an advantage over mine. Ooh, ours is free. You want to listen to Cedars? You have to pay a premium. I mean, that's essentially it, right?
Yes, that is it. And I think one of the larger points is that people need to understand that the internet is great because we all participate in it. I mean, the content that exists out there is not content that's created by Viacom or NBC or any of these large media companies that have controlled other media in the past. It's content that we create and that we own. And we often take that idea for granted, that when we get online, we can go and listen to Sam Cedar as easily as we can listen to someone at CNN.com. And in order for us to protect our collective ownership, our ownership of this new thing, we need to get involved in the policymaking process and make sure that our members of Congress and make sure that our representatives at the FCC don't give away the internet to these very powerful corporate special interests.
All right, Tim, now I wanted to talk to you about the Protect IP Act. That's not coming up for a while, so we're out of time. So I'll have you back, and we'll talk about this other attack that is being waged against the internet. We need to be vigilant about these things, folks, because, frankly, not only is there our rights as a consumer, but also our rights as a citizen, and also our right to dissent. It hangs in the balance of our ability to access the internet as easily as these corporate behemoths. So Tim Carr from Free Press, what can people do right now if they want to influence this debate in any way?
People should go to SaveTheInternet.com, which is a coalition of groups all across the political spectrum. SaveTheInternet.com has a tool there that allows you to call your members of Congress and tell them that you support an open internet.
Tim Carr from Free Press, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Sam.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Brendan DeMille of a Dismog blog. And how do you, if you want to drill in a community and poison their water, it's not just a matter of paying off farmers. Well, you also have to rip apart the community. And what better way to do that than use military psyops? Brendan DeMille will explain in just a moment when we come back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. On the phone is Brendan DeMille from the Smog blog with just a stunning story that he has broken. And Brendan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
Brendan, I want to play a clip that you have posted up on your blog. This is from Range Resource spokesman Matt Pizzarella. I want to play this, and I want you to explain to us exactly what this is, okay? And here is that sound now. It's number 7.
I think we have to get out ahead of all these issues. Everybody knows this. We've talked a lot about it. One thing that we've worked a lot on at Range is just getting more proactive in the community. It's not something that we've done before. In other parts of the nation, it makes no sense for us to do that. In other parts of Pennsylvania, for instance, we have several, I think Matt raised the issue of looking to other industries, in this case the Army and the Marines. We have several former PSYOPs folks that work for us at Range because they're very comfortable in dealing with localized issues in local governments. Really all they do is spend most of their time helping folks develop local ordinances and things like that, but very much having that understanding of PSYOPs in the Army and in the Middle East has applied very helpfully here for us in Pennsylvania.
So that was Matt Pizzarella talking about they have former PSYOPs people on their staff to be proactive in the communities. What's he talking about, and who is Range Resource, and what do they do?
Sure. I mean, this is about the fracking that's going on in Pennsylvania and other parts of the country, the natural gas, unconventional gas drilling process. And Pizzarella and Range Resources are one of the biggest companies fracking in the Marcellus right now, and they've been there for years. And what this statement confirms is what the residents have feared, is that, they're Range and other companies are using military-style tactics and personnel to intimidate and divide their communities for their short-term profit gain. This was a statement that Pizzarella made at a secretive public relations conference, an emergency meeting that was called in Houston last week among the top gas industry PR flacks to talk about strategy. And Pizzarella was suggesting that, they're using active, psychological warfare tactics from the military. He was responding to a guy from Anadarko Petroleum, Matt Carmichael, who had previously talked about his company's use of these tactics and the fact that he considers Rumsfeld's book to be his Bible.
Yeah, let's play this clip from this guy. He's the the external affairs manager of Anadarko. It's Matt Carmichael. This is sound clip number 5.
So, again, this is all industry stuff. Let's talk about this plan and how we executed our media plan. If you're a PR representative in this industry, in this room today, I recommend you do 3 things. These are 3 things that I've read recently that are pretty interesting. Download the U.S. Army/Marine Corps counterinsurgency manual. Because we are dealing with an insurgency. There's a lot of good lessons in there. And coming from a military background, I've found the insight in that extremely remarkable. With that said, there's a course provided by Harvard and MIT twice a year. It's called Dealing with an Angry Public. Take that course. And tie that to the Army Marine Corps Counterinsurgency Manual is that a lot of the officers in our military are attending this course. It gives you the tools, it gives you the media tools on how to deal with a lot of the controversy that we as an industry are dealing with. And thirdly, I have a copy of Rumsfeld Rules. If you're all familiar with Donald Rumsfeld, that's kind of my Bible by the way I operate.
So he says to this crowd, there are 3 things that you need. One is the Marines Army counterinsurgency guy, because we are dealing with an insurgency. When he says, when this representative from this fracking company says, we're dealing with an insurgency, who is he referring to?
He's talking about the residents in Pennsylvania and other communities that are divided over this controversial issue. And he's referring to residents that are concerned about the impacts of fracking for gas in their communities, and you know, to call them an insurgency is you know, pretty inflammatory rhetoric, and sort of shows what they think about this issue.
Brendan, clarify something for me. Are these residents in these towns in Pennsylvania who have lived there their lives and who have their property there and are fighting to maintain their clean water? Are they blowing up these fracking sites? Are they sabotaging them in some way? Are they engaged in some sort of violence? I mean, as we expect from insurgents?
Right. No, not at all. I mean, quite the contrary. These people have tried every reasonable approach possible to engage these their leadership to protect them. And certainly we see with the Department of Environmental Protection in Pennsylvania, there's quite a bit of collusion and protectionism for the industry. There's, you know, a lot of short-term economic interest involved here that, you know, so the insurgency is certainly not, you know, the concerned residents here. The people in Pennsylvania are really the ones under attack from this reckless industry. So it's a concerning thing to hear them talk about the fine folks of Pennsylvania, including a lot of military veterans who have been impacted by this process, you know, as an insurgency.
And so, I mean, from the perspective of these frackers who are coming in and essentially, you know, they know what they're doing is controversial, obviously. They are perceiving the concerns of residents, of people who live in these communities, as being equivalent to that of people who are taking up arms and shooting other people. They know they are essentially waging war on these communities. I mean, by their own definition of their tactics.
That's right. And the Range Resources spokesman Matt Pizzarella mentions that they've hired, PSYOPs specialists. One of those is a guy named James Cannon, who's Range's local field organizer in Pennsylvania. He deals with local governments and residents in these towns. He comes out of the Army Marines and Army Reserve, where he did psychological operations in Iraq. You know, the leaflet drops and the, you know, the intimidation and financial bribery that was going on in Iraq that we know of. You know, that he comes from that background and now is approaching the residents of Pennsylvania with the same mindset and the same tools.
If these guys were still in uniform, doing the exact same tactics, would it be legal?
No, not according to to the law. I mean, we have laws on the books that prevent military personnel from using these tactics on U.S. citizens. We passed an act to prevent it, and it's going on. And, you know, we don't have confirmation that that these guys are active military. A lot of the psychological operations work is done by reservists. Mr. Cannon claims to be an active reservist, but, you know, it's not clear what the law says about veterans or reservists using these tactics. But, you know, it's clearly not okay on U.S. soil. You know, there was a story in the Rolling Stone earlier this year about the use of PSYOPs by military generals on members of Congress, if you recall. And, mm-hmm. you know, John McCain was outraged about that. And there was the Rolling Stone story specifically mentioned this Smith-Mundt Act passed by Congress to prevent the military from using this kind of propaganda technique on U.S. citizens, and supposed to be used exclusively on hostile foreign troops. And I wouldn't consider the people of Pennsylvania to be hostile or foreign.
Well, I mean, I think clearly the fracking companies do. I mean, by definition, they perceive them as insurgents. And one has to wonder, I mean, I was under the impression from, you know, the fracking dinosaur cartoon book that I got my daughter and all of the fracking marketing material that this is a wonderful thing that is saving communities and is a wonderful benefit and a blessing from God to the American public. Why in the world would there be any controversy?
Right. And I mean, this industry has suggested that its goal is to be, you know, the defender of American energy security and is going to be completely transparent and honest with the public as it seeks to develop this unconventional resource. But, you know, the facts show that residents are very concerned about water impacts, the impacts on their health, on their livestock, and on their property values. I mean, I talked to several residents in Pennsylvania that have had their livelihoods ruined by this practice. So it's, you know, it's not a clean source of energy, and it's certainly not an energy solution. It's sort of like, you know, sticking another needle in our arm to hook up to this unconventional gas supply. We're already addicted to foreign oil and coal. So, you know, it's just not working out just the way they're selling it.
Right. And when they say it's a clean energy supply, what they're talking about is a very they're taking a very narrow definition on this, right? Because they're not talking about the damage it does to the environment to extract it. And they're not talking about the damage it does to our water supply when they extract it. They're not talking about the potential other environmental implications that have yet to be studied as to what happens when you start plugging certain areas full of holes that go thousands of feet down. They're just talking about in terms of once we get it out, if you ignore the whole process of extraction, then it turns out to be relatively cleaner than coal. I mean, isn't that their calculation?
That's basically what their argument is that it, because it burns, you know, potentially more cleanly than coal as you burn it, that it's somehow a clean energy source. But like you said, it doesn't count for any of the full costs of drilling and you know, extracting this resource. So it's not a honest communication or a transparent one. So, and I also think it's important to recognize who these guys are. I mean, Matt Carmichael, the Anadarko spokesman, is a former Halliburton employee, worked for KBR. You know, he's Halliburton, of course, has a key role in this fight. They're the ones that developed fracking back in the 1940s, and they're the largest supplier of fracking materials and nowadays. And they are the ones who, you know, the Dick Cheney's Energy Policy Act in 2005 was what exempted fracking from the Clean Water Act and Safe Drinking Water Act. So that's a problem. You know, this comes back to, again, the sort of militaristic approach that these companies are taking, and a lot of it goes back to Cheney's playbook and the energy policy that he tried to sell America.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear to me this is just another example of corporate interests who are essentially sloughing off the cost of their product onto the rest of us. And being able to say that this is perfectly clean fuel if you ignore all the parts of what we're dirtying that we don't have to pay for and that we're not responsible for. It's other people's problem. We just get the profits. We socialize the costs. It's another example of the corporations and the 1% making the rest of us pay so that they can profit. Brendan DeMille, the blog is the Smog Blog. Check it out. We'll put a link up there. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Sam.
All right, folks. That is the end of the lesser half of the award-winning Majority Report podcast. And now we will move into the better half of the show, where I will play the crazy Joe Walsh, not the one from the Eagles. Not the one from the Eagles, the deadbeat dad, Tea Party congressman, who not only loses his crap on a on constituents, but also serves up a steaming pile of lies to them. And, of course, we have clips from the clown car last night. I will answer the question, what is wrong with Rick Perry? Here's the answer. He's on some type of drug. And we'll also ask the question, can Mitt Romney actually succeed in a campaign when he's not facing sexual harassers, drug abusers, and general loons and con men? You'll have to stick around for the better half of the program to find out. You can IM me at Majority FM. You can call me at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920, or Skype us at Majority Live. We'll be right back after this. Oh, and folks, how could I forget? Please become a member at Majority.fm. We need your membership. And next week for our birthday, we'll be doing a 12-hour show from 11:30 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You'll be able to listen live if you normally podcast. You can listen live to the show that week. It's going to be a ton of fun, and hopefully you'll become a member during that time. You can support the show by getting fair trade coffee, buying your crap on Amazon through our link. See you in the better half of the program.